you for the opportunity to be here this weekend and to have been studying these topics with you. I thank you for your interest in it and for the good job that I see you doing in these things already and your interest in pursuing these reminders about the wonderful obligations and responsibilities and blessings we have in our children. It's also just been very encouraging and edifying to me to see on all various sorts of levels the good job that you're doing at so many things, and I commend you for that. It's good to see all the young people and to see you attentive and singing and sitting up front. It's discouraging when you see a congregation that has very few young people, and maybe the ones that are there are sitting on the back and not singing, and it's just sad when that gets to be the state in which things are. I'd like to encourage you young people to appreciate and remember to just think about the blessings that your parents give to you as well as the blessings your Heavenly Father has given to you, and remember to show the honor to your parents that you should, and that when you hopefully become parents yourselves, you will begin to realize the sacrifices and the time and the heartaches and the work that your parents have put into you. It's been wonderful. I always enjoy being around the Halls. I've known the Hall family off and on, and respected and appreciated the work that the family and the extended family has done for so long, and count it a blessing to be able to see and be around them whenever I have opportunity. I've been able to see a number of other friends while I'm here, and it's been really nice staying with Russ and Kay, and it was topped off by some imported Alabama Whips barbecue, so I've just had a really wonderful weekend, and it's good to be here with you. Before we continue right on with talking about child training, I would like to talk a few minutes more about what we talked about Friday night, and that is marriage itself. Children are the product of this union that God established in Genesis chapter 2. And it can be such a wonderful, wonderful, powerful, positive thing when we work at it and appreciate it and make it be what it needs to be. It can be a source of bitterness in conflict and agony when we don't. And there are probably people here this morning who find yourself on all points of that on the spectrum. I know that I have not always been the husband or the father that I need to be. But I'll tell you, I'm more in love with my wife now than in the earlier and earlier and earlier years of our marriage. I want that to happen for you young people as well. And one of the things I want you to think about is something that was already mentioned this morning. As you get older, it doesn't mean you won't still, fellas, love your wife and find her attractive. My wife is still my girl. You know, I still like to take her out on dates. But one of the other reasons that I love her is because of the wonderful mother that she is. Your children are going to be a very, very important thing in your life. And who you choose for a spouse is going to make a world of difference in what your children are like. As you're choosing a spouse, girls, don't forget, you're choosing your children's daddy. As you're choosing a spouse, fellas, don't forget, you're choosing your children's mother. Choose well. And I like that old expression, you know, a man's home is his castle. In that castle walls serve for a defense and to secure that place. And in that castle, the people inside should have safety and security and love and joy. Let that be what's going on in your home. Don't let it be the opposite. Open your Bible, please, to James chapter 3. Anytime people live together, anytime parents and children, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, there's going to be the opportunity for friction. There's a way to avoid that. You can live on an island in a cave all by yourself, and there'll be nobody to not get along with. I wouldn't recommend that. When you live in a family with other people, there's the blessings of the associations of those other people, but there's also the opportunity for problems. Learn how to handle those problems. Listen to this in James chapter 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by his good life his wisdom and his works and meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and faction in your heart, glory not, lie not against the truth. This wisdom is not a wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where jealousy and faction are, there is confusion in every vile deed. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, of good fruits, without variance, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace for them that make peace. Let that be what's in your home. Remember, those of you who are married, those of you who are going to be getting married, remember that love involves giving, not just getting. Giving. John 3:16, God so loved the world that he gave. Jesus said, as Paul quotes him in Acts chapter 20, it is more blessed to give than receive. And you may have heard the story. I don't know if it's true. It'd be funny if it's true. I have a feeling it's one of those apocryphal tales. But it serves to make the point anyway about the young lady who wanted to get a divorce. And she hadn't told her husband yet, but she went to talk to the lawyer, and she was just so mad at him, she wanted to make sure it really hurt him. And so she went to the divorce lawyer, and she said, how can I really get him? And he said, I'll tell you what you do. Don't let him know it's coming. And you just start treating him really nice. You know, make him an apple pie. Give him a kiss when he comes home. Just be really nice. Just go overboard. And he'll think everything's fine. And then when he's just all excited and thrilled and happy, just jerk the rug out underneath him and serve him with the papers, she thought. That'll get him. I'll do that. So she went home and she started doing that. Of course, weeks and weeks and weeks go by, and the lawyer never saw her again. And finally he does, sees her somewhere, and says, when are you going to come by and get the papers? She said, are you crazy? We're the happiest we've ever been. And of course, the point being, when we start giving, we start receiving. You can reverse that and make it the other way around too, and it would make the same point. Husbands, if your wife's the queen in the castle, treat her like a queen. If dad is king in that castle, he's got all those responsibilities and to provide and secure for his family and lead them and stuff, respect his leadership. Kids, enjoy the benefits of that home. One last story, and then we'll get right into our lesson on the child training. And this is something I heard. It was on the radio. Maybe some of you have listened to Dr. Laura Schlesinger. I don't know if she's a psychologist or a psychiatrist. But she was telling about a letter she got from a lady in the Northwest. And I think she married late. And her friends all thought she was very unromantic because she had made a list of the qualities she was looking for in a husband. And she was waiting to find somebody that met those qualities. And her friends thought, well, that's not romantic at all. You know, you're supposed to see some guy and just love at first sight. Yeah, how can you? At first sight, you can't tell what a person's character is. You can tell what the outside looks like, but you don't know what the inside looks like. Proverbs said, a beautiful woman without discretion is like a gold ring in a pig's nose. This doesn't do a whole lot of good. But she'd made a list of the qualities she was looking for. And one day she met a man who had a list. And their lists matched. And they got married. And the remarkable thing was that, and this is why she wrote the letter, after this she got a horrible disease. I don't remember what the disease was. But she just lost a lot of control of her body and her muscles. And she, I don't know if it was from the medication or the disease, she just began to put on huge amount of weight and body fat, and she just couldn't even take care of herself physically anymore. And she said, my husband, during that illness, he just took care of me and never complained. She couldn't even bathe herself. She'd get on a chair in the shower, and she couldn't do anything for herself, and he would just take care of her and express his love to her. You know, when you get married, you remember what some of the things are you say? Do you take this woman for better or for worse, in sickness and in health? As I recall, eventually her health improved, and wonderful for them. Pick somebody that loves God and understands what God wants to do, that will put God first. And you do the work to make your home and your marriage what it needs to be. Wives, do that. Husbands, do that. And if your other half is not doing enough of their half, you do more and see if you can't motivate and encourage them to do. Children need healthy, loving, joyous homes, not toxic environments. Let's provide that for them. Let's go back and review just a few of the verses from Proverbs that we went over the other night. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Discipline your son while there is hope, while he's still pliable. Do not desire his death. Proverbs 19:18. 22:15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. And by the way, sometimes that foolishness is pretty funny. And sometimes, if you know, you're sitting there, you know, and you're having to hide the smile while you're dealing with what's going on. But you still got to deal with it. I remember April one time. She told a lie. I looked at her little tennis shoe, and somebody had taken a ballpoint pen and written all over her shoe. And I said, April? I said, who did that? She said, a snake did it. And I said, snakes don't have hands. He said, he held it in him's mouth. And she got a real hard, it was very funny. She got a really, really, really hard spanking that day because she was just a little tyke, but she had told a lie, and I wanted her to understand you don't. Why? The funniness of it aside. And by the way, catch them in those lies when they are little. You know, they'll be impressed that you figured out it was a lie. You know, if you let them get good at it, by the time they're 16, you're going to have trouble knowing what's a lie and what's not. Get them trained when they're little so that when they're 16 and you ask them a question, you know that you were told the truth. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from them. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Correct your son, and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. Amen. Coming back to the mistakes that are easy to make, we now want to talk about settling for situation control instead of training the child. This is one of the more important things I'd like you to focus on in this series. Some parents don't try to control their children, and it's just horrible. Some parents try to control their children, but they make the mistake of stopping there. We're not just to control our children. We need to teach our children self-control. Have you ever heard somebody say, Well, my child's not going to do that under my roof. That's lousy parenting. Maybe they won't. And what have you accomplished? They'll do it under your neighbor's roof, or they'll be itching to get out of it from underneath your roof so that they can do it. That's not our job. We're to train up our children. There's a book. They kind of have some Calvinist tendencies and such, but they've written some real good stuff, things. Michael and Debbie Pearl. I'm not sure exactly what their religious affiliation is, but on the topic of child training, they've written some really good stuff to train up a child. And I forgot some of the other titles, some little paperbacks that have all sorts of anecdotes about it. And there's one I would like to share with you because I thought it made a point really well. And it was about a little boy who there's some other kids over and another mother over, I suppose, and there is one Twinkie in the house. He's come in from outside, and he wants the Twinkie, and so he grabs the Twinkie and he heads it back out. Well, Mom knows there's a potential problem coming. There's several boys in the backyard playing, and there's only one Twinkie. So she doesn't want her child to go out and eat a Twinkie in front of the other kids who are Twinkie-less. So she says, no, you can't do that. You need to give the Twinkie back. Because she has not done her job before this, he disobeys. And so he wants a Twinkie. Mom wants a Twinkie. He wants a Twinkie. He acts like he's going to eat it. Her job now, she thinks, oh no, he's going to eat the Twinkie. So she tries to get him to not eat the Twinkie. I hate to think what the Twinkie looked like, by the time they got done. But Mom, being older and stronger, finally prevails and gets the Twinkie. And then the little brat says, think I have a cracker? And she said, okay. You see what happened? Foolish, foolish mother made the mistake of thinking her job right there was to keep him from eating a Twinkie. Her job is to train her child. And she totally, totally failed. There's something on that patio worth more than that Twinkie and that child's soul. And she's failing to train it. I have six children. One is married and lives in Knoxville, Tennessee, and they have a little girl. That's April. One's in college, and the other four are still at home. They range in it. They're all 4 years apart. I have three girls, three boys. They're 24, 20, 16, 12, 8, and 4. And I'm going to tell you a story about my 16-year-old. Brianne was probably the easiest child we had to raise. She, in some ways, I would say she's the most mature person in the family and has been for several years. She's just a good, good, good girl. There are things she needs to work on and develop, but she's really a fantastic girl and was easy to raise. But the day she decided to rebel, and it's remarkable, I was thinking about it the other day, two of my easiest kids are the two who, when they decided to rebel, they really went for it and we had the longest disciplinary sessions. Others will do kind of like little skirmishes, but don't really go for atomic warfare. But Zachary and Brianne, who were in other, maybe one of the reasons they're so easy because of the nuclear war on those two individual occasions. Here's what happened with Brianne. She was about three, and she had a easy to get in car seat. She was supposed to just get in it and lock it up, and off we go. Well, we hopped in the car and cranked it up, and I started to pull out. And April says, Brianne didn't get in her car seat. And I said, Brianne, get in your car seat. And she didn't do it. Well, that means she needs to be punished. I told her what to do. She didn't do it. We make a mistake when we say, I told you to do that. Don't make me tell you again. I'm telling you, don't do that. That just teaches. I heard about a little girl. I was doing this series out in Nebraska, and somebody told me about a little girl. I don't remember her name. Let's just say it was Jenny Louise. She's upstairs. Mom's down here. And she said, Jenny, come down here. A few minutes later, Jenny. A few minutes later, Jenny, you, come down here. And mom says, Jenny Louise, come down here. And her aunt says, your mom is calling you. Little Jenny Louise. Little bitty girl, says. She'll say it three more times. You know, they learn. So, she says, so I've told her to do it. She didn't do it. Well, she's got to get a spanking. I pull over by a stream. I get her out of the car. I get a switch. And we have the lecture. I explain what she did wrong. And then I whip her. And then I say, now get back in your car seat. Rianne got up. She got inside the car. And she sat beside the car seat. I bring her back out. We're going to do this again. We have the lecture again. I tell her it's my job. You know, Daddy loves you. Daddy's not mad at you. But it's Daddy's job to make sure that you obey. And you're going to and lecture. And then this time she really gets a whipping with that switch. Now, get in the car seat. She got up. And this time, she got in the car and sat down beside the car seat. I pull her out again. We go through the lecture again. I took the switch. I whipped her hard again. And this time, she got in the car and she sat down beside the car seat. I took her out again. We lectured again. I whipped her again. I think it was about five times. And that little three-year-old stinker finally got in the car seat. And later that day, I said, Brianne, I said, why wouldn't you get in the car seat earlier today? I said, did you think Daddy was going to give up? And she said, uh-huh. And my little girl needed to find out that she hadn't tested those waters before, but that day she decided to go for it, and she needed to find out that her parents were not going to give up. And then she found that out. And we didn't have any more of those. But what would have been easier? I could have spanked her and stuck her in the car seat. What's the difference in those two? The first one, I would have controlled where she sat as if the most important thing that day was whether or not the car seat, you know, was in place. I want my child to be in her car seat. But more than that, I want her heart to be right before her parents and eventually before God. Sticking her in the car seat doesn't get her trained. What she needed to do was submit her defiant little three-year-old will to her parents' instruction. And doing it for them doesn't require them to obey. She had to do it. Lucas, this was the longest one I ever had. I thought it went a long time with Brianne. Lucas, he took, you know what? It wasn't Zach. I've got Lucas down there. It was Zach. That's right. It was Zach getting dressed. And Zach has hardly given any trouble since. But one day when Zach was little guy, it's Sunday morning, I said, come here and let me put your pants on you. And he just stood there. Well, again, it would have been easier to do what? Go over there, pick him up, put his pants on. I'll show you who's boss. If I say your pants are going to be on you, your pants are going to be on you. But that wouldn't have been him obeying. So, of course, he got a spanking. Then I came back over here. I said, now come over here and let me put your pants on you. He stayed standing over there. So I went back over there, and I spanked him, you know, talked to him, spanked him. Came back over here, and pretty soon the whole family's in there, and everybody's saying, Zach, go to them. He would go to Brianne. He would go to Tabitha. He would go to Bertina. He would go to anybody but Dad because he decided he wasn't going to do it. By the way, he was only about one. And then I'd walk back, and he knew what he needed to do, and he wouldn't do it. Not maybe not every 1-year-old would know, but he knew, and I knew he knew, And everybody in the family knew he knew. And they're saying, come on, Zach, you can do it. Go to Dad. And he just wouldn't do it. Finally, he did. About 45 minutes later, he did. And he came crying, and he didn't do a whole lot of crying before. I mean, he did some wailing, but now his heart was touched. And his little will broke, and he came over, and they're always sweet after that. Be careful what you do. I mean, it got to the point I'd spanked this thigh, and I'd spanked this thigh, and I'd gone to this calf, and that foot. And by the end, I was mostly hitting my own hand, you know, because I didn't want to hurt him, but it was still kind of scaring him. But he needed to break that little will and do it. After I went over these points, doing this series in Maryland a while back, two or three days later, a lady came up to me and she said, I want you to know that that point was a life-altering experience for me. And she said, after that, she said, because like if my little girl didn't want to be in her high chair and she'd bust it, I would just pick her up and I'd just stick her in it. She said, I stopped doing that. She said, I decided I was going to nip every defiance in the bud. And after 3 days, she said, my child is behaving so much better and she is happier. God's ways work. Mere control versus training. You have external control. We're trying to train the heart. What does Proverbs 13 say? Excuse me, that should be 22:6, not 13:24. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, so that when he is old, he will not depart from it. They need training. Teach them self-control, so that after you're no longer around to control them, their hearts have been trained and they have self-control and respect for our Heavenly Father. There's one other thing I want to do real quick related to this, because I forgot to do it this morning in the yesterday in the lesson about self-control. And that is, remember the child psychologist that recommended never spank, but don't worry about yelling and screaming. Remember that guy we talked about? What a lot of parents need to do is sit down with their child and have this conversation. I'm sorry that I've been yelling and screaming. I'm going to stop doing that. From now on, I'm going to say it one time in a calm voice, and then you'll do it. Let me explain kind of how that scenario tends to work out. Here's Junior, and he's maybe playing some arcade game. And Mom knows that he needs to get up for school in the morning, and so she says, Junior, it's time to go to bed. And he goes, And he just keeps on like this. And then later she said, Junior, I said, go to bed. She said, okay. A little while later, Junior, I mean it. You know, it's getting late. It's past your bedtime. You've got to get up right now. Okay, just a minute. Well, this goes on for several minutes, you know, over and over. And then eventually she gets distracted by something else, a telephone call or something. Finally, she comes back. Now it's 45 minutes past his bedtime. She walks in there. He's still there. And now she loses her temper. She starts yelling and screaming. She comes over. And now, you know, the high pitch, the yelling. And it's like, I told you. And she starts yelling at him. And he realizes what? Now he's got to go to bed. So now he drops it. Okay. And he scoots off to bed. And she goes, why does he do that? Well, we know why he does that. He does that because she's trained him to do that. She's trained him to not respect what she says in a normal tone of voice. He's learned she doesn't mean it, or at least I don't have to do it, till she's screaming. What she needs to do, she needs to say, Junior, I'd like to talk to you. Do you like it when I yell and scream at you? He goes, no. She says, well, I'm going to stop. And I apologize for the yelling and screaming I've done. He goes, cool. And then she says, instead, here's how it's going to work. I'll tell you in a calm, nice tone of voice what you need to do, and you'll do it. And then if you don't, you'll get a spanking. Does anybody here think Junior believes this? No. Trust me, if you think you have that conversation with Junior after this pattern of behavior, and you think just saying that is going to do it, that's not going to do it. You've got to show Joe you mean it. So the next night, you know, she lets him know. In about 5 minutes, it's going to be bedtime. Wrap up what you're doing. And maybe she can even learn to have him do something more profitable than he's been doing. But regardless of that, she gives him some notice about, you know, whatever you're doing, wrap it up in about 5 minutes because it's going to take time to go to bed. Then about 5 minutes later, she comes back in and she says, okay, Junior, you need to go to bed right now. Okay. Hey, what? And she says, you're getting a spanking. You know, go get the belt. He says, remember our conversation? And what does he want to say?
But you weren't screaming yet.
But something in the back of his head tells him, you know, better not. And so, she wears him out. And he goes to bed, sore with something to think about. Well, what's going to happen tomorrow night? Same thing. She's going to say, he's going to be in a habit, and he's going to get another spanking. But sooner or later, like we were talking about, he's going to find out that the lottery is closed, and there's going to be no chance of getting away with disobedience. And then what's going to start happening? Mom says what to do, and he's going to do it. I was talking about this one time at a camping group, and I went around the room and I said, everybody put some child training advice in three words. And my favorite was one of the moms said, first time obedience. Isn't that a good concept? And it's a lot easier, isn't it? Train their hearts. There was a little boy one time. He was told to sit down, and when he finally sat down, he said, but I'm still standing up on the inside. If they're still standing up on the inside, we're not done. Train their hearts. Last one, and then we're going to talk about temperament. Some of you noticed that after you've had several children, some people who've never had children think it's all training. It has nothing to do with your natural temperament. If you've had several children, you've noticed that they come wired a little bit differently. We're going to talk about that for a few minutes in just a minute. But first, we want to talk about this in birth order. The mistake of lowering the bar from the firstborn to the baby. So many good people have done this. It's been repeated over and over and over and over. Now, it's not an absolute, and I'm not saying this because I'm firstborn. I'm not. I was kind of, I guess, a little bit of the black sheep of the family. I asked my dad one time. I said, Dad, I said, why were you always harder on me than the other two? This was when I was in college. Well, I deserved it. It was one of the reasons. He nicely said, I think it was because you were more like me. And I know what he meant by that. He didn't mean I saw more of my qualities in you. He meant the opposite. I wasn't the firstborn. I was the middle child. But I've recognized, and you've recognized, a general pattern. I mean, you can be the baby of the family and have wonderful character and do great things. You can be the firstborn and be irresponsible and a problem. But very often you've seen this pattern. The firstborn holds a job, gets married, has a stable family, you know, meets their responsibilities, and is expected to. The baby's 42 years old and still living in mom's basement. And somebody says, how's Junior doing? Oh, you know, well, his parole officer says he's doing real well this time, and, you know, we're hoping that he'll get a job. You ever seen that? Why is that? Luke chapter 15. Turn there with me, please. It's interesting. Jesus didn't have to put this detail in there. He didn't tell us what the boys' names are as he told this story. You didn't have to say which one was older and younger. The older one is going to have his own issues to deal with. But notice for the story which son takes the money and wastes it all living irresponsibly. It was the younger one. Verse 11, a certain man had two sons. The younger one of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of your substance that falls to me. And of course, in verse 13, not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country, and there he wasted his substance with riotous living. Why does this tend to happen? Let me give you several reasons real quick that I believe play into it. One, do you remember, those of you that have had several children, do you remember when you had that first baby? Do you remember how careful you were when you came home from the hospital? Do you remember how careful you were with the diapers? Do you remember first baby's diapers? You know, you carefully put it on. There's some baby powder, maybe some ointment, you know, and by child number four, and the pacifier. Baby number one, the pacifier falls on the floor. Moms, what did you do? Oh, no! You know, and you've got that thing, maybe you sterilized it, got some real hot water. By child number two, cold water will do. Child number three, you know. Child number four, let the dog lick it. Because you've learned after having her for a few years, you walk over there, you see them eating a pile of dirt and stuff, and you realize God made them pretty resilient. And they're not as likely, you know, to get hurt as you thought. And you realize, I was a little overcautious. Well, it's okay to learn that on the pacifier. Although I was one time, I was studying in jail with some inmates, and then some of them had been moved to another cell, and I had another preacher who was there with me, and we teach this one and that one. We went down there one day because there was a fellow soon to be released, and we were thinking he might be baptized. And as we're talking there, the thing, he got his three-year-old with him. And we turn around, and I look, and his three-year-old is bent down, licking the floor of the jail. That's not good. But he survived. It didn't hurt him. You know, it's kind of gross, but he survived that. The same thing, though, we get to thinking the same thing with their moral and responsibility behavior. Child number one, we make sure they say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and they obey on the first time, and they pick up their toys, and they do this, and they do that, because we think, I want my child to turn out good. I want my child to turn out good. I want my child, and we do all those things, and then the child turns out good, and then we make the same mistake on the pacifier thing. We think, oh, that wasn't so hard after all. The child lived not because you washed off the pacifier. But the child grew up well because you did do the work of training. And sometimes we make the mistake of backing off on both areas. And then you will have different results on the character. Another thing, and this is just a fact, when the firstborn is born into the family, who are his peers? Who else is in the family? Adults. You're not an adult, but you're child number one, and you come into a household that has adults in it. And so you tend to model adult behavior quicker. If you're child number six, you come into a family with a bunch of kids. And so it's easier to adopt childlike behavior. And that's going to make a difference in how quickly somebody's going to grow up. Another thing is, you remember child number one? Do you remember how eager you were for that child to smile? Couldn't wait till it said its first word. Couldn't wait till it took its first step. Couldn't wait till, you know, it was potty trained. And it, you know, you had the calendar. Remember the calendar? And you marked every one of those events. And then, moms, what happened? Before all those steps happened, it seemed like it was going to take a long time, right? Oh, will he ever sleep through the night? Oh, will he ever get potty trained? Did it really take that long, or was it over really, really quick? It was over pretty quick, wasn't it? You know what we do sometimes with the last child? Have you ever heard a mother say, when some of the older siblings maybe bring up and point out the irresponsible behavior that's being enabled by the parents who keep paying his bills or, you know, letting him live in the house when he's not meeting his responsibilities towards his own family or all sorts of things, when somebody criticizes him, you ever heard the mom say, "But that's my baby"? Sometimes moms watch those first ones grow up and then they realize, oh, that went over quick. And so they don't want that last one to grow up so quick. Babies are a wonderful thing. 30-year-old babies are not. Don't lower the bar. Last thing we'll talk about is this: temperament and birth order. There are, if you had several children, some of them were pleasers, right? They naturally wanted to please you. You know, they liked to get along with people. And you probably had at least one or two stubborn ones, right? I mean, you could get them to behave, but their natural inclination was not, "What would mother like me to do today?" That's just not their natural inclination. Have you had both of those types of children? Sometimes people they'll have the pleaser, and maybe he's the firstborn, and that works together there. And then they think, "Oh, this is easy." And then they'll get the other, and they don't know what to do. Sometimes people will have a stubborn child, a strong-willed child, and they'll think, "Oh, this is terrible." What I'd like to suggest to you is that both childs have their strengths and weaknesses that they need you to guide and strengthen and channel into God's service. A child that's a pleaser will naturally be a little bit easier to deal with. But you know what you're going to find out? You need to help that child develop some backbone and some character. If you're April was a pretty good little girl. And, you know, there were just things I knew she wouldn't do. One day we had some folks over and they had a boy. It was kind of a stinker. And if he did something, it wouldn't have surprised me. But, of course, my girl's a good little girl. Well, I walk back into the room and there's their boy with a marker or an ink pen or something just writing on the wall of my house. Which was a disappointment, but not a great big surprise. The surprise was, right next to him is my little girl. Doing the same thing. She likes to get along with people. If you have a child that enjoys getting along with people, you know, and is a people when they get to be in their teens and somebody says, "Come on, do this. Take a puff on this. Take a drink of this." If you've got somebody that likes to please other people and not disappoint other people and never develop backbone, what's going to happen? On the other hand, I suspect that, you know, Galatians 5, it lists the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit. Satan is not a creator. He's a perverter. You look at those sins in the works of the flesh, almost every one of them is a perversion of something that's good. Adultery and fornication are perversions of the right relationship between a man and a wife. It's over and over, sin is like that. Revenge is a perversion of the desire for justice. Jealousy in the wrong place God gave us the ability to be jealous. If your spouse tells you they're leaving you for another person, should you feel jealous? Yes, you should. God, because that is your wife. If your neighbor gets a bass boat and you don't, should you feel jealous? No, because that's not your bass boat. There's a place for anger. There's a place for jealousy. There's a place for sexual feelings. There's a place for these things. Perversion is when you get them out there. God, it's like painting like the Mona Lisa. The devil is like the vandal that comes on and sticks, you know, buck teeth and a mustache on it. Satan perverts things that are good. Strong will is a good thing in the right place. strong will that's devoted to, I'm going to get my way, is a horrible thing. Strong will that is devoted to, I'm going to do what's right and what's good no matter what, is a good thing. If you've got a child with a strong will, be thankful for it if you will take the time and energy to help them channel it. I don't know. We don't have a record of Paul and Barnabas as kids. But if I was going to guess, I would guess Barnabas was a little bit more of the pleaser and Paul was a little bit more of the strong will. Barnabas is a wonderful character. There's so much to love about Barnabas. What's the one time you see Barnabas mess up? The other brethren, including Peter, withdraw from the Gentiles. And what does Barnabas do? Goes right along with them. Remember April writing on the wall? What does Paul do? What they were doing wasn't going to stop him at all. He stood up right in front of everybody and condemned Peter to his face for what he was doing. I suspect if we had the record of a lot of some of the famous generals and people that have done heroic deeds and leadership and such, you'd probably find that a number of them were rather strong-willed as children. Now, that doesn't mean if you've got a strong-willed child, you say, well, he's just stubborn and strong-willed. He'll do great things. If you don't train it and he doesn't train it and channel it for good and for submission to God, he'll just do rotten things throughout his life. But whichever type of child you have, if you've got that pleaser child, that some of you in here right now, if there's somebody that needs to be encouraged and consoled, some of you are just perfect for that because that's in your nature. You just have an empathetic, kind heart. And you just so easily do that. Some of you, you can do it, but you kind of have to work at it. Some of you, if there's somebody that needs to be rebuked, some of you say, I'll do it. You know, you don't mind the conflict. He's wrong. Somebody needs to tell him. I'll do it. You don't mind the conflict. Somebody else, I just couldn't say anything. Whichever side you naturally have, you need to work on the other side some. If you naturally don't mind standing alone and doing what's right and not caring what other people think, you need to care what other people think enough to be fair and kind to them and take their feelings in consideration. You'll be able to be independent and strong no matter what other people do, naturally enough. And if you're kind-hearted, as we all should be, just by nature, you also need to develop the character to stand up and stand alone and stand against when you need to. And whichever way your child is, you help them to do that. If you've got a stubborn one, it's going to be more work, but make sure that you win. Because when you win, when they put their little defiance up, when you win, your child wins. I want to thank you so much for the opportunity to have studied these things with you this weekend. If you are here this morning and you're not a Christian yet, I want you to think about where you stand before your Heavenly Father. Are you in defiance against your Heavenly Father, or are you in submission to Him? If you need to do that, won't you respond as you need to as we sing this song of invitation?